Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 202.
Hello, hello, this is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we take a ruler to democracy and see how big it is. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad. Hello, and congratulations on finishing that very popular Netflix series that was either about true crime or tigers or remodeling or getting rid of stuff. So now what? Now you listen to this episode, and let us get started with topic number one. Okay, you guys, we're going to talk about noise, and joining me for this segment on our modern auditory malaise is comedian Shalewa Sharp and writer and podcast host Ashley Ford. Hey, guys, thanks for coming on the show.
Hello.
Hey.
So we read a few different things about noise, and I just wanted to get a sense from you guys where – what is your relationship with noise? Like, do you ever get annoyed? Are you ever in your apartment? You both live in New York City, right? Okay, so do you, so we're in an epicenter of noise, but it's not even some. It's suburbia has this problem. I mean, everywhere in the country has this problem. What is your relationship, and do you find are you at odds with noise?
I need a little noise.
Interesting.
Just a little. I need something. You know, a car going by, or the way my apartment is now with the setup of the buildings, there's like a odd kind of courtyard and there's wind constantly just kind of whipping around,
yeah,
and it
yeah.
has a real angry wolves quality to it. That at times is a bit much. I like to think that I keep a fairly quiet place for me personally, but I also talk to myself and sing to myself a lot. And I don't know how loud that is. I need a little noise. My parents, once they lived deep suburbs, borderline country, suburbs. And it was too quiet. I did not care for it.
Like, was it too quiet when you were growing up, or what?
No. This was I was an adult when they moved out.
We
always lived in a place where there was a little noise.
So when you go to visit,
when I would
like,
go visit, I was
weird.
Like, there's not. This is too quiet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Ashley, what's your relationship with noise?
I'm from Indiana, and I didn't move. you automatically laughing. I'm from Indiana.
So I'm on that Hoosier shit. And so
what does that mean exactly?
Noise is hard for me, bro. Like, it's really got, I mean, because the noise, so I'm
you grew up in, like, right, you grew up in the country, is that right?
Not really the country, no. It was like, I mean, it was in town. Like, I feel like, I don't, where are you from?
I'm from Palm Springs, California. So right, I grew up in a small town, a weird small resort town, a retirement community.
I don't know how to explain, like, Midwestern, like, mid-level cities to people, but it's like you're not in the country, but you may encounter some country shit.
Okay.
Yes. Like, I didn't live technically in the country, but there was definitely, like, a field next to my house that led to a forest.
Right.
But then there was just another neighborhood on the side of that, the other side of that forest eventually.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's the kind of place.
That's the kind of situation that my parents was in. This was in Atlanta, Georgia. So, yeah, it's quiet.
So it wasn't. So it's quiet, but it's like, it's quiet at certain times. During the day, anybody could, like, drive by. You know, you hear cars, not many, because most people are at their 9 to 5 in the Midwest. You may hear kids, especially in the summer, like you hear people noise, but you don't really hear like traffic noise or construction noise or things like that. You don't hear that. One of the things that I really miss is bugs. I don't hear bugs in
That is something. Yes.
I never hear cicadas or anything.
In Atlanta, there's definitely the cicada situation that I had forgotten that I missed until I go back.
What does that sound mean to you?
It is just a constant reminder. Yeah, constant buzzing that reminds you that life is happening. that something is going on. It's in the background of everything.
Yeah.
And it just, it sounds like hanging out outside, sitting on someone's car hood, talking about all of the important things while just a is going on behind you, just a constant. And it is a great, like, sound to me. It's just like an ambient sound, but I need something, some sort of ambient sound. I don't necessarily want it to be a jackhammer.
Do you feel like, right, but besides like in your own home, do you feel like there is a whirring of technology sounds, like, that are just happening?
No, I don't think so.
Because, like, the article sort of pointed out that one of the articles that we read, a psychologist named Roseanne Capona Hodge, she pointed out when it comes to kids, their nerves are stuck on overdrive and sensory experiences such as noise can really produce intense reactions. Add fearful experiences such as school shootings to an already anxious kid's world and you have even more reactivity. So she was pointing out that in her practice, she's noticed more and more kids having, like, misophonia, like a condition where they're sensitive to certain noises.
I'm sensitive to the sound of breaking glass.
Interesting.
What does that do to you?
I am really sensitive. I mean, it depends. There have been times where I've heard a broken glass and completely, like, burst into tears immediately.
Wow.
In my home. Mm-hmm. When I'm in public, I feel like I'm especially in New York, I feel like I'm already a little bit on edge, and you never know what's going to happen in New York.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of like somebody breaks a bottle down the street and it's just kind of like, keep walking.
Right. Yeah. Always on your toes.
Yeah. But in my home, hearing, and I'm better about this now, but that is very recent, like probably within like the past 5 months. But hearing like a glass break, hearing like in like kitchen breaking noises, things like that, I would either cry or completely dissociate.
So that's literally the kind of thing that the psychologist was pointing out to when it comes to kids. They're having to deal with just a lot more generalized noises from appliances, from whatever. And on top of, like, just an anxiety world that we live in, and on top of probably, like, phone usage and all that shit that gives them other kinds of anxiety, it's the noise has just compounded these other phenomena in creating anxiety for children. And it sounds like you have like a fraction of something like what the psychologist is talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, and it's interesting because I, you know, after
reading about all this stuff yesterday, I was like kind of sitting in my apartment and thinking like, what can I hear? Because I think what's interesting, and they talk about like, you know, your blood pressure responding to things, even if you're not super conscious of them. And your, you know, your psyche responding. They talk about like living near water, like having like an ocean wave sound in the background can calm you. You know what I mean?
Ooh, train tracks. I always lived near train tracks.
Yes, was love that, train tracks.
A lot. So
was
a
that
lot
of, calming to you, or was that like stressful to you?
Calming, actually.
Interesting. Me too.
Yeah, the sound of literally the sound of just a whistle,
distant, like
some sort of crazy country song. But yeah, and it was usually like, not like commuter trains.
Well, it's funny because I think also that association is like very analog. You know, it's not something, you know, it's not something like a kid today is like, oh, distant sound of train tracks.
Right.
Whistle.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like you say that and I instantly think of like some erstwhile American.
Unless they live in the Midwest.
Right. Unless they live in the Midwest. Because, I mean, we're still like Midwest, Indiana is still the crossroads of America. And those trains still keep people from getting to appointments on time. And they still wail in the middle of the night. And I forget about it until I go home sometimes and I hear it. And all of a sudden, it's like this wave of calm.
Yeah.
Like I hear the train or I hear like the rattling of it or something like that. And it's just like,
yeah, and I don't even, and I'm surprised how many train tracks I encountered in Atlanta, Georgia, because I grew up like in Northeast Atlanta, and there was, you know, a random train track there that was used quite a bit. And then before I moved to New York, I ended up in Southwest Atlanta and could hear commuter train and freight trains. And I was just like, I've been throughout the city a good deal and always managed to end up somewhere. Where I heard, I mean, it was Terminus. You know, that was where all the trains ended for the South, so where you could get supplies and everything. But I'm surprised at how many of these tracks are still in usage.
Yeah.
Enough that it is calming when I hear it.
It's interesting. So let's talk a little bit about, like, the way work happens now with noise. Because one of the trends is, like, having these open plan office spaces.
Ugh, and hate
right, it. You do, so you hate it. It's interesting because, so, you know, people have often asked me, I wrote a book called How to Make White People Laugh, available wherever books are sold. And people, you know, will ask me, like, oh, like people are like going on to write books themselves. Like, how did you do it? How did you get it done? You know, and I went to a writer's retreat, actually, and wrote a really large portion of my book at this writer's retreat in a fucking studio, quietly looking over 5 foot of snow and deer running, a family of deer, like, running in the middle distance, right? And, like, it was the quietest, most, you know, bucolic setting I've ever been in. I've never... I don't have that kind of quiet in my life. And yeah, I got a lot of shit done. But the other, I wrote like about half of my book that way. The other half of my book, I wrote sitting in Bryant Park here in New York City, which is maybe one of the busiest parks in America, surrounded by the noise of 1,000 other people. Walking around, chatting, like doing their things, buying a sandwich, ordering a coffee. You know, there's a fucking little Ferris wheel. Not a Ferris wheel. What are those things called?
Oh, merry-go-round.
Merry-go-round in Bryant Park. That is, I wrote half of the book surrounded by so much noise, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think I'm just one of these people that sort of like needs a whole bunch of noise as like a buffer between that and just like the reality of my soul.
Yeah,
I do that when I write, when I have to write about something really tough. Like once I get to the point where I have to write about something that I've probably been avoiding and being like, oh, I'll write every other part before I get here.
Right.
I also need a buffer. I need something that separates me from my intense, strong emotion so that I can just get the thing
get
down.
Through it. Yes.
Just
yes.
Get through it. And I usually end up listening to Sweeney Todd.
Interesting.
While I'm writing hard things because it's intense.
I used to write at the club. Okay. I spend a lot of time at nightclubs dancing or whatever. And yeah. One in particular in Atlanta. And I just knew, like, my best friend worked the door there. I knew all the people who opened it, all of that kind of thing. So I would just have notebooks on me. And this was in the time of
the
zine.
At night when it was
functional? When it was open, I could sit under, you know, before it got crowded and there were just people doing things. But the DJ's there and they're playing music. I could, and I think it's the music element of it too, because I like to listen to music a lot. So I would just sit there, but I mean, it's still through a booming system and there's still glasses and ice being poured.
And you could get some stuff done.
I don't know if I was, I was just writing.
What is it about? Okay, so these are like very noisy situations we're talking about. Mm-hmm. What is it about the open office plan that doesn't work for you, Ashley?
People won't leave me alone. I don't know if anybody else.
Yes, it's
had
the invitation.
Problem, but it's just like the fact that people can see you makes them feel like you are available to be interrupted, like no matter what.
Yep.
And it's also just this thing of like, I mean, in general, I'm a pretty anti-authority person. I don't like nobody telling me what to do. And I definitely don't like anybody feeling like they could be like, you're supposed to be in your seat for 8 hours a day. And I walked by your desk and you weren't there. So where were you? Like stuff like that. Well, I'd rather be broke. I'd rather be broke. I don't have kids. I don't have a mortgage. I could do with very little. Me and my dog are going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like I can feed Astro. So I can't do it. I just don't have it in me. It's too much. Those fluorescent lights.
Well, the other thing about the interesting thing about like the conversation we're having is that we're all like pretty privileged to be able to have careers where we do a lot of like intellectual work, right? And that we can sort of choose the setting in which we do it. And some of this, like, where does noise play in your mind while you're working and how does that feel and all that stuff has like a whiff of privilege.
Oh, no, absolutely.
You know?
I read years ago something about a quiet home denotes how much money is being made in the home.
Yeah.
That's why I've always, and that totally made sense to me because I was like, I try to keep a quiet home, but I know me.
Yeah.
And if someone were to come in, they'd be like, why is it, it's just you.
Yeah.
How is this happening? And I'm like, I don't know.
I grew up in a super chaotic environment when it comes to being able to be quiet or be alone. Until I moved out of my mom's house at 18, I couldn't just go to my room and be like, I need quiet. Can you imagine telling a black mom, I'm going to go to my room for a while. I just need some quiet.
I mean, I was able to do that, but it meant nothing. It meant nothing.
It meant nothing.
If I was like, I'm going to my room, if I announced that I was going to my room, that's going to be
like,
that's a roasting right there. And then if I went to my room and closed my door too hard based on someone's unknown standards, doors open. Like,
no more privacy.
So.
I mean, coming from an ethnic family, in an immigrant family, the idea of quiet was really, I would like, this is so embarrassing. I would sometimes like waltz into the kitchen and make an announcement to my parents, like, I have a really important test tomorrow and I'm just going to need the entire house to recognize that. Because they're immigrants, they were like, you know what? She's gotta get straight A's. And you know what I mean? It was the pressure on me to be perfect in that way was so intense that like, they were like, yes, you have a test tomorrow. And that's the most important thing happening in this house.
Oh,
right,
my goodness.
You know what I mean?
They would have roasted me to this day. I wouldn't.
My family would still be bringing it up.
Yeah.
They'd be like, she needed some quiet. Go in her room and shut the door.
I'm not working these three jobs so she can have her own walk-in closet to sit in.
You
go in there.
Saying?
Why you got to tell me what you're doing? Like, it would have been a wrap.
There was no room for that.
But there is also something.
I think that's part of it now is like, it's not just, it's knowing that not having the quiet is agitating you, but feeling like you are not entitled to ask for quiet or space.
Yeah.
Necessarily that it's like it's there. It's that not only is it there, you feel like if you need to get out of that, that people are going to look at you like, what makes you think you're special? Which is such a weird thing that people do. Like somebody just tells you, like, this is like, I think
this
I
is a thing I need. Yeah, I just need like, this one thing, and to have a whole house full of people like, what?
Yeah. I mean, there is something though I have to say about the idea of quiet. You know, you mentioned like the quietness level of someone's house is like directly correlated with how much money they make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of like these sort of like these depictions of wealth in film and television are really quiet.
Yes.
You know?
Silent.
Silent. And I think
there is no noise in the movie Ordinary People.
Right. I'm thinking about that show Trust, about the, what was that guy who lived in Italy or something, and he owned and his grandson was kidnapped. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, it was a movie?
It was a movie, and it's a TV show called Trust.
Oh.
Anyways,
it's a famous art collection.
I can't remember his name. Anyway, but like the depiction of wealth in the film and in the show is like just quiet and I want to say joyless.
Yeah.
So yes. I think there's something about there's the sound. I used to live next to a playground. In the East Village in New York City, and I heard kids playing all the time. And it's funny because some people come and like, oh, that must be so annoying. And I was like, no, it's full of joy. Like, I actually really love it. The sound of these children keeps me going. It makes me feel bright and lighter. And I really, really did love that sound. But I think, so there's like, there's so much class distinction that we can make with sound. The sound of a house of a mom and a kid and yelling and all that stuff is joyful to me. The sound of a subway rattling by and a jackhammer sounds also like poverty. You know, there's these sounds that kind of have a particular class distinction to them.
Right.
And it's interesting because sometimes the sound of the subway and the jackhammer rattling accompanies the sound of joyful chatter inside the house, right? Like there's these, you know, overlaps.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's there's something about the sound of wealth being so quiet that I find very depressing.
It is.
It's distant.
Yeah.
It's like it's very cold and distant because you think about like how do you end up in a like it's the idea of the rich person sitting in the big house on all the land. All alone.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's my last.
Like, that's what it is.
Yeah, that's what it is. And it's sad. Here's my last question for you guys. Are you the type of people that will call 311 and make a noise complaint?
No. Mm-mm. No.
No.
Never.
No.
I'm not a snitch.
Me neither. And it's
because
funny.
Because I know where I live.
Mm-hmm.
I know where I live. And so I know what I live in. Currently, I live in Bushwick. There are lots of parties to be had.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let them have their parties.
Let them have their
parties. I'm here because I live here, but this isn't. It's not my place to stop. Y'all have been here for generations. How am I going to come in and be like, you're going to need to turn off your little music. I'm trying to get a nap in. What are you talking about?
No, it's funny. Yeah,
it's not your place. You saw what the neighborhood was like when you got there.
Yep.
They didn't
Stop
throw up some sort of hot, like Hollywood fake thing, you know, town. And you were like, yeah. And then it all fell down and you're like, what? That's not what happened. You saw all of that. So you should have, I mean, I know that I'm originally from Flatbush. Brooklyn, and I know
that's where I live now.
Yeah, and so the West Indian population, that's where it is. And so, like, that's also, I guess, maybe in my formative years, what I think of, what colors me. And so I know that a lot of people moved into what is now called Prospect Lefferts Garden, and they kind of complained about steel drum practice, like steel drum rehearsal, bands having rehearsals there. And I'm like, how do you move to a West Indian neighborhood? And there's no there's no doubt that that's what that is. That is a West Indian neighborhood. And complain about the steel drums.
Yeah, right, right,
did
right,
you do
right,
no
right.
research? Did you, were right. you not?
I agree.
How do you, well, how do you funny, move in have, years and years, like decades?
We, so I lived on, I used to live on Third Street in the East Village, and I made a movie called Third Street Blackout that was set in the, that was set in the blackout after Hurricane Sandy. Mm-hmm. And there's a character that's based on a real life person in the show and in the movie. And he is this guy that lived across the street from me that just DJed very loudly out his window. The speakers were pointed out right. the window. Uh-huh. So it was like for the block, he was just DJing music. Mm-hmm. And in the summer, it's just sort of all day long. And we all as a neighborhood were sort of like, that's what happens.
Yes.
You know, we don't, we never, and that, and I was so, and he was like, you know, an anchor for the neighborhood. Everybody knew him. Everybody shot, and still does. And you know, and I got his permission. Like, hey, I'm gonna cast someone to be you. And he was an extra in the movie, and it was right. really fun. But that's the thing. We you sort of like. You're like, oh, I'm going to live on Third Street on this particular block. Like, I'm going to do it with the knowledge that this guy DJs the neighborhood,
right.
you know,
yes.
and that's just something we all agree to, you know, and
yes.
and it is something
also
we all
an important
agree to.
Thing about noise is that when something goes wrong, if you know the noise, then when it's not there,
you know
that something has
right.
gone wrong.
Right, right, right.
So
yep.
it's important to know that. And sometimes it's important to hear.
Well, and that's exactly, you know, during the blackout, it was sort of like, oh, let's go check on our buddy. Like, where's the music? You know
right,
what I
yeah,
mean?
Exactly.
And so that was and he became sort of like a point of contact during the blackout
yeah,
when you couldn't contact, you know, when all the communication was down.
Yeah.
All right, you guys. Thanks for sharing with, I think to myself, we're gonna talk about noise, and it's such a weird little subject. And is there anything to say about it? And then here we are, having said a shitload of things about fucking noise. You know what I mean? It's just remarkable. Mm-hmm. I think you guys are fantastic. Thank you so much, Shalewa Sharp. Where do people find you?
At Silky Jumbo, all one word, traditional spelling on all of the social media.
And Ashley Ford, where do people find you?
I smash fizzle on Twitter, smash fizzle on Instagram, and everything is available from my website at ashleycford.com.
You guys, thanks so much for joining the show and talking about noise. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the history of loneliness. Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that. But we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness
for like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/FakeTheNation will be taken off. That's pros.com/FakeTheNation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/FakeTheNation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/FakeTheNation. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing
thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Next topic. So we read The History of Loneliness by Jill Lepore in The New Yorker. And as we tape this, we're still sheltering in place. So the question of how modern life became so lonely is of particular interest. And to talk about this, I'm joined by comedian Mike Kaplan. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
And comedian Dana Dude. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Nagin.
So first off, what was your reaction to this piece, The History of Loneliness?
It was fascinating to like learn like statistically the numbers of like that, you know, 100 years ago, I feel like we've learned that it used to be people lived with their families, like multi-generationally, which still happens, you know, in some cultures, some communities around the world, but in America, at least it's become, you know, like more individualistic. Be like, you know, go out on your own, the nuclear family, like have your own place. You don't live with your parents and grandparents forever. That's seen as like a failure of a kind. And like when people are getting back to it, it's not seen as like, oh, you're close with your loved ones, but you know, like, oh, you're not making it as a separate entity. But so it was to see that it was like 90-something%, whatever the percent was, a massive percent.
I think
of
it was
people.
Literally it was 95% of that, people lived in not only 5% lived alone.
And that was kind of mind-boggling to learn, because I mean, I think I've read statistics, I don't know if it was in this article, that today, even a lot of people still do live with a partner, but like 50% of people identify as lonely, like, which includes a lot of people who are partnered, who like, right. Which is even potentially worse to feel lonely when you're with a person, like that there's nobody that you're close to, nobody who understands you. So it's to see that at least, you know, 100 years ago, it's only a recent thing. It's only now that there's so much loneliness, and that feels good, historically speaking, at least, if not.
Because like we can find our way back to the thing that was meant to be, that had been for millennia.
Yeah.
Can I just do like a quick mention of that fucking heartbreaking story of the chimpanzees that she started out with?
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. There was like a chimpanzee and like a couple kind of deal. And in the Philadelphia Zoo in the 1800s, one of the first zoos in America. And this isn't a, you know, I'm not, well, I'm, we're here to spoil this article. So I will. So what, but this happens in the very beginning anyways, just to make the point that we're primates and we need people. Like the chimpanzee, one of the chimpanzees dies of like some kind of heart failure or something. And her partner has such, I'll just read the passage. It was so horrible. He dashed himself against the bars of the cage and butted his head upon the hardwood bottom. And when this burst of grief was ended, he poked his head under the straw in one corner and moaned as if his heart would break. And I just straight up cried when I read that. I was like, wow, like paragraph 3 of this article and I'm already in tears. But it was, I think what was so tearful about it is how very, very human it is, right? And we're seeing it through the eyes of a chimpanzee.
I mean, yeah. I had a different reaction because I read that and I was like, man, this chimp was whipped. Like, seriously, bro. You gotta keep your distance, bro.
Yeah, man, you're totally free now, except for the cage that you're in.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other fish in the sea outside of the bars that you can't escape.
Made me really regret watching Tiger King anyways, for a whole host of other reasons. But Dan, what were you going to say?
It was super, super depressing article. I do think it was interesting. And Nagin, I wonder if you felt this as well, but first generation people, we kind of straddle those two worlds. Like, you know, the article's like, back in the day, people used to all live together. I'm like, yo, my parents and their parents did this. Like, this is our generation, basically. And in a way, I think that immigrant kids have it the best in a way, because we still kind of have that, and our families are still super close and super huge. But we also get the, you know, we get our own apartment, we get our own place. So I do think that,
but we're the generation after which it frays. Right?
Yeah, no, our kids are fucked, but we.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I thought immediately as I was, I thought about the, you're exactly right, Dan, that speaks to me exactly, because what I first thought about is one of the places that we stay when we've gone to Iran is my grandmother and grandfather's house that was like this kind of two-story, like sort of compound. Like, I mean, this makes it sound lavish. It was definitely not. But it was my grandparents lived there, and then my uncle lived there with his wife and his four kids. And then as they grew up, I think one of the kids also lives there now with his kids, and you know, my cousins. And so it's fantastic. It's sort of like walking into a constant hang. That's what it feels. I mean, I really love to see it. And there's this thing that's happened in modern life too, which I wonder what you guys think about and how much complicity we have in it as comedians, is this concept of like hating your in-laws and like doing bits about hating your in-laws. I mean, Dan, are you married or?
No, I do have a lady friend.
So do you have a relationship with her parents, or have you guys ever been in relationships where you like complain about the parents, you know, your in-laws are like, or even your own parents, you're like, oh, I would never want to be around my parents all the time. That line, those kind of themes happen a lot in comedy. And I feel like how do we get here where we like hate parents? You know what I mean?
You know, I've been thinking about this because like I am not similarly. I don't have a big family. I don't have, I have a family who's been in America for at least several generations. So my mom, I'm an only child. My mom is an only child. And we actually just lost my grandmother, my mom's mother, about a month ago. And one thing that's been, you know, it is sad, and also it has brought me even closer to my mother, like partially because of the pandemic and she lives alone, and I used to talk to her like once a week. That would be like a nice time to check in, and then she had her life and her friends and her activities. Yeah. And now she has, you know, less going, like, no, you know, she'll go out for walks, but she doesn't have as much human contact. She doesn't live with a person. Like, I'm fortunate to live with my girlfriend. And I think that, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot because, you know, when I was a kid, I had a good relationship with my parents before they were divorced. We all lived together. I was sheltered and fed and clothed and cared for. And then it seems like a human thing, or at least in our cultural thing, or at least, you know, in Western culture, for me, I can talk about, I guess. I'm like, everybody. Okay, no, I only know me. Like, you know, as a teenager, you know, you start to become your own individual person and be like, get away from me, mom and dad. Who cares? Or mom and mom, or dad and dad, or parent and parent, whoever you are. Many parents, polyamorous parents, whoever, you know. And eventually, like, I'm going to be my own thing. I'm going to be, you know, my. And then you're an adult. And I remember as an adult, my relationship with my parents, I was finally like, oh, that teenager was probably annoying, you know, like, and now I'm like, oh, you were originally part of their body. You were made of them literally. And then there's this separation that happens gradually until you're like, I'm my own person. And then eventually you come back around maybe to be like, oh, I'm part of this family, and like you can feel this closeness again. And maybe some people don't, depending, obviously not everybody loves their family of origin. Not everyone was treated well. Like there's your piece. Some people have their logical family as opposed to their biological family, your chosen family. But like, I feel fortunate that I now get to like reconnect with my mom in a way that, you know, I never really even thought about it. It used to be just like, I'm myself, I'm on my own, I'm succeeding, I'm doing it, I'm heading in this direction, where maybe you can get too far in that direction. Like I read about like the donut economic model, where it's like, you want to have everybody get at least this much, otherwise they're in the donut hole and they don't have enough, but you don't want to have too much more than this, because then that'll like ruin, you know, the planet, the economy, the weather, the ecology, the system. And so I feel like, at a certain point, you need to have your own identity, and also you need to recognize that you're part of a larger thing, or maybe not need, but you get to if you want to. So I think that to answer your question from many years ago, the reason that we have this, like, you know, my mom does this, you know, or is because we do have that need, at least somewhere within us, to become our own person, to forge our own path. And right. Then that expands, and it's like a roast joke, you know. The ideal of a roast is like somebody that you love, that you're like, I'm gonna say mean things about this person that I really actually secretly respect. And hopefully when you make jokes about your own family, you're like, they are me, I care about them, but boy, this person that I care about sure does some things that I want to talk about. But if it gets too far in that direction and other people are like, yeah, your mom really is like that, you're like, hey, you're not, hey, you can't, don't, shut up, you know. Shut
yeah up, no, I mean, and I I feel like it's a roast joke that, you know, and it's that teenager vibe that people do not get out of, like in their 20s, in their 30s, in their 40s, they're still doing it. You hear, like, if you hear about someone living with their mother, it's like some indicator that they failed in life. Or if you hear about a family that like lives next door to their in-laws or whatever, and the in-laws help with childcare, you're like, oof, you know, that's great about the childcare, but man, that must be rough. There's this notion, and I believe that all of you can hear the fucking siren, the fucking car alarm in the background. Yeah. Let's give it a quick sec for that thing. I don't know when it started. Oh, there, I just noted. Okay, here we go. But there's this notion that, oh my God, what was I going to say? That you've done something horribly wrong with your life. Right, that like, you know, oh, they're you know, you live next to your in-laws. I mean, that's great that they can take care of the children, but like, oof, how tough it is to live near your in-laws. There's this idea that we should have boundaries. Like the word boundaries is such a in vogue term. It's been in vogue for like 10 years or whatever. Everybody has boundaries. So many, respect my boundaries. So-and-so doesn't know my boundaries, blah, 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 boundaries. And it comes into play in a lot of different realms and in some very legitimate ways. But in this way, when it comes to human loneliness, I think we have taken boundaries way too far. I want to remove boundaries, and I want people to like fucking get back together with their people. You know yeah. what I mean? And I don't, you know, it's like all this alone time and I need my space. And like, why do you need your space? We don't actually need space. You alone will suffer and die, because that's what happens to human beings, because they're not supposed to have their space and be alone. That is exactly the opposite of what we need. And I'll just say, by the biological response, according to the article, she writes, quote, we breathe fast, our hearts races, our blood pressure rises, we don't sleep, we act fearful, defensive, and self-involved, all of which drive away people who might actually want to help and tend to stop lonely people from doing what would benefit them most, reaching out to others. Are you on board with getting rid of all of these boundaries that we set up?
You know,
basically, Dan.
I have a very bizarre firsthand experience with this that I'm going through right now. I moved to New York 4 months ago for this job, and the job is in Long Island. My parents live in Long Island, and the job is 15 minutes from my parents' house. But I was like, there's no way I'm living with my parents. Even for the, you know, 4 hours that I get back from work, I can't do it. I need my own space. And I got myself a beautiful apartment in Brooklyn. Coronavirus happens, And I was about to come back to LA, but then I found out that my parents just, you know, for some reason, everyone's parents weren't taking this seriously.
Yes, yes.
I found out my dad went to the supermarket to buy like one carrot. And I'm like, what is happening? So I decided to move in with them. And I've been living with my parents for a month now.
Amazing.
Yeah. So it's the most bizarro, weird thing. And in the beginning, it definitely was a little tough to adjust to it. But like, literally, we spend the whole, it's not even like I go to work. We spend literally the whole day together. We wake up, we have breakfast together. Then I go off, do something. Then we have lunch together. Then we all start drinking at like 5 o'clock. And
that's lovely.
My mom makes dinner and my dad like bosses us around. And then we watch like Homeland. Like it's so fucking bizarre, but there's definitely something kind of nice about it. Like there's definitely something kind of fun about it. There's always going to be someone in the house, always someone to hang out with. Like you said, it's like there's always a hang.
I think that's lovely. It's funny because I'll stay at my parents' house like really long time over Christmas. You know, the business shuts down. And now that I have this baby, they want to spend time with the baby. I mean, we were there for like over 3 weeks and people find the idea of like voluntarily staying with your parents for like, you know, almost a month to be totally insane. But I, again, and then again, maybe it's from because of our cultural context that it's fine for me. You know what I mean? Sure, they drive me crazy and all those things, but there's also like, there's this ultimate comfort. I think there's a biological thing that sort of switches on, which is that you're safe because you're in numbers, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like we've gotten so, you know, we've gotten so into this, like, this, you know, turn on, especially now that with like the tech world, like a Netflix, it's not even Netflix and chill now. It's just like Netflix and be solitary and don't interact with anyone, you know? Yeah. In pandemic or not, it worries me. And then I think in the middle of a pandemic, I worry more that this aloneness will either grab hold and become more and more of our reality because we've been living like this for a month or whatever, or the more hopeful analysis is that we'll go in the other direction and be like, oh, that fucking sucked. I want to be around people and I want to be around people all the time. Yeah. What do you think in closing? What effect do you think this pandemic will have on our concept of loneliness?
I think for so many things, this pandemic will—it's sort of forcing, new ways of behaving, new ways of acting and doing and being, like, and just existing in your space, in your life, in your mind, in your relationship or the people, if you're living with people. And there are certain things that, like, when it's done, hopefully, will be like, woo, glad to not have to do that or glad to get to not do that. But then there's some things that might be like, oh, it's actually nice to, like, have been in this situation where I'm cooking with my girlfriend more, like, than we were before. Like, ordering food less, you know, just being, like, hopefully in the future it'll be more by choice and not be like, oh, we now choose to do this thing that we were forced to do before. So I think that with loneliness, I mean, the good thing about this time, or one good thing, one silver lining of this atrocity, is that the abundance of time that more people have means that like now, like Dan Adut and I have not had a conversation in many years. And now we are because now we have the time and the capacity. So hopefully we can take the positives from this, the silver linings from this dark cloud, and then move them forward and continue to enact them when the sky is brighter.
All right, you guys, that is the end of that segment. Quickly, and I just want to say to everybody, if you live with your parents or your in-laws, Bonus points from Nagin Farsad. You just get life bonus points. I think it's fucking great. I don't think you made mistakes. I think you're smart, and I think you are probably happier. I want for people to know where to find you guys online. Where do they do that, Mike Kaplan?
Thank you so much for offering that. I will, before I say where you can find me, I just wanted a real quick plug for my buddy Josh Gondelman, a hilarious comedian with wonderful positive jokes about his in-laws. He's like, basically, these are people, like I've new parents who didn't get to know anything embarrassing about me from earlier in life. So he's like, I'm pro in-law. So if you want some pro in-law material, check out Josh Gondelman, wonderful comedian.
I know exactly like the stuff you're talking about. It is very pro in-law.
And if after that, if you want, I also have a bunch of comedy albums. My latest one in 2020 is the album called AKA, available wherever albums are. You can follow me on social media at Mike Kaplan, MYQKAPLAN. And my podcast is called Broccoli and Ice Cream. And thank you so much again for having me.
Dan Adut, where do the people find you?
Well, first, I wanted to start off by saying thank you so much for having me, because Mike ended with it. I started with it. You guys can find me on my socials at StandUpDan on Twitter and Instagram. And you should listen to my food podcast, Green Eggs and Dan. Soon to be on the new Netflix show, The Crew.
Great. Thank you guys so much. That is it for the show, you guys. I want to thank the production team here at Fake the Nation. That's our producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens. Gabby Alter wrote our theme music, and Lily Fleshler helps with research. And you guys, we'd love to hear from you. Send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, or guest ideas you might have, or recipes you think I should be making. I don't know. Leave us a voicemail, 347-770-4981, or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. If you like what you hear, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, because it helps people find out about the show. That's real. Thank you, guys, and until next week, goodbye.